Blog Talk Radio.
I stand up for my dad.
I stand up for my mom, who's the strongest person I know.
I stand up for survivors like me.
I stand up to change the odds.
I stand up for Granny. She was a friend and a role model.
I stand up for Marshall Smith, one of my good friends.
I stand up for my grandmother, Anna Nana Brown.
I stand up for Ellie.
I stand up for Susana, Carlos, and Julio.
I stand up for those who stood up for me.
We stand up for Nancy.
I stand up for my friends. For the kids.
For my baby sister.
And all of baseball stands up for Tony Gwynn.
No matter who we are or what we do, we are all touched by cancer.
I stand up to cancer.
Good evening, Inside and Movie fans. My name is Benson Fechter, and I will be your host tonight. We have a very special episode for you. And usually, we are a baseball show, and we discuss all things related to baseball. But as you might have heard in the open, it was all about standing up to cancer. Today's show is going to be extremely special because it is our annual Stand Up to Cancer show. Usually, I like to work alone on the show, but once a year, I like to bring in a co-host to help with the discussion. And this year we have this very, very special guest, and Savannah.
Thank you for having me on, Benson. It is my great pleasure to help you out today.
And we are very happy to have you. So without further delay, let's get right into some of the, sad news first. And what we're about to share are the startling facts about cancer and how it has affected our world's population. So number one, over 20,000 people die of cancer every day.
Number two, cancer causes more deaths than AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria combined.
Number three, there are more than 100 types of cancers. Any part of the body can be affected.
Number four, 50% is the lifetime risk of developing cancer for a man in the United States.
Number five, over 30% of cancer could be prevented by avoiding tobacco and alcohol, having a healthy diet, and physical activity.
Number six, there are 28 million cancer survivors worldwide.
Number seven, exercise like walking can reduce breast cancer by 25%.
Number eight, a marijuana-derived compound forces cancer cells to freeze and prevents them from spreading.
Number nine, a single cigarette contains over 4,800 chemicals, 69 of which are known to cause cancer.
Number 10, multivitamins increase the risk of cancer and heart disease, according to recent studies.
Number 11, there are more skin cancer cases due to indoor tanning than lung cancer cases due to smoking.
Number 12, taller women are more likely to get cancer, according to a recent study.
Number 13, three Marlboro men died of lung cancer, Wayne McLaren, David McLean, and Dick Hammer.
Number 14, cancer mortality rate has fallen from 215 deaths per 100,000 people in 1991 to 172 deaths per 100,000 people in 2010.
Number 15, Angelina Jolie's breast cancer announcement doubled the number of women being tested in its first few months.
Number 16, pre-diabetes increases cancer risk by 15%.
Number 17, pilots and flight attendants are twice as likely to get skin cancer, melanoma, from higher exposure to UV rays.
Number 18, breast cancer kills 450 men in the United States every year.
Number 19, in the U.S., 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime.
Number 20, red wine kills cancer cells.
Number 21, trained dogs can sniff out prostate cancer with 98% accuracy.
Number 22, if you could live long enough, it is inevitable that at least one of your cells would eventually develop cancer.
Number 23, a man is 35% more likely to be diagnosed with prostate cancer than a woman is to be diagnosed with breast cancer.
Number 24, Gleevec, a cancer drug that costs 70,000 dollars in the United States per year costs just $2,500 in India because it can't be patented there.
Number 25, plants can get cancer.
Number 26, every 13 minutes, a woman dies from breast cancer in the United States.
Number 27, air pollution causes lung cancer and is also linked to an increased risk for bladder cancer.
Number 28, redheads are more likely to develop melanoma than people with other hair colors.
Number 29, a man called Billy Owen lost an eye and half his face to cancer and used it to start a career as a zombie actor.
Number 30, just 65% of people with cancer in the United States survive.
Number 31, musician Eddie Van Halen blamed guitar picks for giving him tongue cancer.
Number 32, once a dog hits the age of 10, its chance of dying from cancer is 50%.
Number 33, elephants rarely get cancer because they have 40 copies of genes that code for the tumor suppressor protein P53. Humans only have two.
Number 34, a cooling cap can prevent breast cancer patients facing chemotherapy from losing their hair.
Number 35, cancers are primarily an environmental disease with 90 to 95% of cases attributed to environmental factors and 5 to 10% due to genetics.
Number 36, ovarian cancer is linked to the use of Johnson & Johnson's talc-based baby powder.
Number 37, 3.5% of cancer deaths worldwide are attributable to the consumption of alcohol. The World Health Organization has classified alcohol as a group 1 carcinogen.
Number 38, by cutting down on alcohol, keeping a healthy body weight, and exercising, you can reduce the risk of cancer by 30%.
Number 39, injecting gold into the body can help fight cancer.
Number 40, there's a service called Cleaning for a Reason in the United States and Canada that cleans the houses of women with cancer for free so they can focus on their health.
So that's going to do it with our 40 startling facts about cancer, some good, some bad. But when I was doing my research for the show, a lot of these facts, they were really startling to me because even though 20,000 people die of cancer every day, which is way too much to begin with, I also learned that we can prevent 30% of the cancers that we get. If the world's population would just avoid tobacco and alcohol, maintain a healthy body weight, and just get 60 minutes of physical activity a day, the number of 20,000 people dying of cancer per day would be reduced to 14,000 people per day. And the sad part about all this is that those are causing those extra 6,000 people per day. If you stretch that number out over a year, it would be 2,191,500 deaths just because of the aforementioned causes. That number right there is killing us humans. We're killing ourselves at a rate of 2,191,500 people per year. It's far too high. The sad part about this to me is that the tobacco companies, they keep selling their products that are killing some 2 million people. There is all this cancer research, and that's great. But I think some of those research donations should be put towards trying to get rid of tobacco in our society, because all it's doing is killing us. There are no positive effects of tobacco at all. All it does is harm us. Same with alcohol. In fact, as we said earlier, 3.5% of cancer deaths worldwide are because of alcohol alone, which means 700 deaths daily are attributable to alcohol and the alcohol companies. The alcohol companies are killing us at a rate of 255,675 people per year. I've personally been affected by alcoholism in my life, and Savannah and I, we were talking a little bit about this off air, and we concluded that alcohol, it really does nothing for us, and it just hurts us and the people around us. So we decided to make a vow to never drink.
Yeah, Benson, and the fact that 255,675 people are killed every year due to alcohol is way too high. The United States should just revert back to 1920 when they decided to prohibit alcohol for 13 years from 1920 to 1933, meaning that over that time span alone, the U.S. saved 3,323,775 lives. But ever since they took the prohibition off, they have just cost lives over 21 million people, which is far too high. So here we are saying it firsthand, if the United States would just look at the facts, they would see how many lives they are costing by not putting a ban on tobacco and alcohol.
And another case where the United States are being selfish in the battle against cancer is the fact that we can sell a drug for $60,000 more per year than they can sell it in India. The United States does have a patent system, and the drug Gleevec is patented. But why would they let the drug be patented if all that patent does is costing cancer patients who are already going through such a rough time in their lives? They're costing them extra money that will either have to be paid off by their future family if they die or by them if they survive. Our efforts should be focused on finding a cure and saving as many lives along the way and making it practically free, because the lives are what matters the most. And if the quality of life is already poor for these cancer patients, why would they make it worse by charging them a fortune to get treatment when they could go to India and get it for far cheaper?
Yeah, this Gleevec drug is just another case of companies and the government being selfish and caring about money. But I bet if those companies and the government were in the cancer patient's shoes, the story would be a whole lot different.
Without a doubt. And today, we were trying hard to get John Lester on the show to share his story with all you guys himself. But instead of moping around, we decided to share his story that we gathered from news outlets with you. And we are going to take a quick break on Inside MLB. But when we come back, we are going to be discussing the John Lester, Anthony Rizzo story and how they bonded over their cancer fights back when they were on the Red Sox together. We're going to take a quick break on Inside MLB, but we'll be back in about a minute. Back on Inside MLB, and thank you for tuning into this special Stand Up to Cancer episode. It is our annual show. We are very excited for it, and I thank you for all who are tuning in. We'll get to who you all stand up to later, but I know I got a question from the audience on what injecting gold into your body does, and actually injecting gold into the body can help fight cancer. I did not know the specifics of that, but during my research, it was in one of my facts that I came upon. So pretty interesting on that part. All right, so let's get into talking about John Lester and the whole Anthony Rizzo thing with him. So I guess without further ado, we will get right into that. And I think it was really interesting for us in our research, and I hope you're interested as well. So again, let's get started with that. We'll start off with this. "It's insane," Anthony Rizzo said, when asked about playing with John Lester and the Cubs. "They both survived cancer as Red Sox players. They're both leaders. Rizzo, a powerful first baseman. Lester, the ace of the staff after signing a six-year, $155 million deal. Rizzo, who has become one of the National League's top sluggers, still remembers a rainy day in May 2008 when he had just been to Dana-Farber for treatment."
The Red Sox brought him to Fenway. During a rain delay, Rizzo went down to the clubhouse and spoke to Lester for more than an hour about his battle with lymphoma.
"He really helped me out," said Rizzo. "I'll take his message to me during that time and pass on to kids I speak to. He told me that during treatment, don't let your world stop. Go out and do things you enjoy and make you happy," Lester said. During my healthy times, I go to the gym or go out and throw a football around or shoot basketball. And that really helped me get through a really tough time in my life, and I'll always be grateful. Lester has said he was just trying to pass along his experience to a younger player. He does so with people he meets all the time. Lester already has impressed new Cubs manager Joe Maddon and former Red Sox brass now with the Cubs, Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer, and Jason McLeod, with his work ethic and leadership.
Rizzo started to take on a leadership role last season when he broke through with 32 home runs, 78 RBIs, and a .913 OPS.
On a team of young hitters, Rizzo has arrived. He's gone from prospect to the real deal. Now he's hoping to show his young teammates the way.
I think the interesting thing here is watching these guys come up together, said Rizzo. They've been through the minors together. They're a tight-knit group. My job is to help acclimate to the majors. It's just like we have Kevin Youkilis over here now as a special assistant. And the first thing I asked him, how was the parade in 04? I've asked John about it and all the guys here because I've never been through it.
On December 6, 2010, Epstein, then Red Sox general manager, completed a blockbuster deal, signing Rizzo, outfielder Ramon Fuentes, a former first-round pick, and pitcher Casey Kelly to the Padres for Adrian Gonzalez. At the time, Hoyer was the Padres' GM. Then, after Epstein and Hoyer reunited in Chicago, they acquired Rizzo in January of 2012, along with Zach Cates, for Andrew Cashner and Kyunmin Na. Rizzo said that he and Lester have yet to talk about their Red Sox experiences. Rizzo said, but we will. It's a fascinating story. I know John probably doesn't remember this, but he struck me out on 6 pitches in a spring training game.
Oh, Lester will remember. Right now, that is on the back burner.
Lester, who was 116-67 in 9 major league seasons, said of his leadership role with the Cubs, I go about my business and I try to have fun doing it, and that's really it. I don't have any magic secrets or any formulas or anything to give these guys. I put my head down and I do my work. And if that in turn makes guys want to follow me, great. If that program doesn't work for them, it's no big deal.
Lester has been with the Athletics before signing with the Cubs, so his Boston experience is twice removed.
He's really focused on the here and now, and I think we all are, said new Cubs backup catcher David Ross, also a teammate of Lester's with the Red Sox. John looks great, and he's in a great place. He really wants to look at the traits of 2 championship teams he was on and bring them here. I think guys are all ears.
Lester said the confidence he brings is the same confidence he wants his teammates to have.
I think you have to be confident, he said. If you come in and go, I hope, I hope, I hope, it doesn't get you anywhere. There's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. If you can walk that line, you're in the right frame of mind. If you come in here and go, it's just another year, we'll see what happens, that's not going to get you anywhere. You have to come in with the mindset that we're going to win the World Series.
Their cancers were different, but their fights were the same. Lester and Rizzo will always have that between them. Now they're trying to break a curse. The Cubs haven't won the World Series since 1908, similar to the 86-year curse Lester helped break in Boston.
That's part of the reason I came here, Lester said. It would be pretty cool to win it all here and experience what we did in Boston.
Lester continues to avoid talk about his contract defining him.
My contract doesn't justify me or represent me, he said. I represent myself and how I go about my business. My competitiveness doesn't change because I have X amount of dollars in the bank. I want to win. You'll hear that a lot. If I don't win, we don't win. And you probably really don't want to be around me too much. I'm not really happy. You can talk to my wife about that.
Lester will forever love Boston. He'll forever be friends with John Henry and Dustin Pedroia. He knows he can't shed the Red Sox. He's got daily reminders with the Cubs, including teammates Felix DuBront, Daniel Bard, Jonathan Herrera, Ross, and non-uniform personnel such as Epstein, Hoyer, McLeod, and Darnell McDonald.
And also Rizzo, a bond built because of cancer and how they overcame it, to becoming 2 of the best players at their positions in all of baseball. And this was really interesting to me when I was doing the research, right? I tried really hard for you guys to get John Lester on the show. I actually had him booked, but then things sort of fell apart on Saturday. So I know on Friday I told you guys that John Lester, he was going to be on the show, but that sort of fell through, and I apologize because of that. But his story was really interesting. We'll get into that a little bit later. But pretty much in 2006, the Red Sox rotation was a little bit like muffled up, and he came in as a rookie, and he pitched pretty well. Then in about August of that season, he was scratched from a start due to a stiff back. And this stiff back was supposedly because of a car crash he had been in earlier in the month. So he went back to Boston for testing, and he was put on the DL for the stiff back. The testing showed that there were a possible diseases with cancer being one of them. And lo and behold, he was diagnosed with cancer, and he got through with off-season chemotherapy treatments. He came back in 2007 and pitched amazing. So great story from there, great comeback story, and I loved it when I was doing my research. I wish he could have told us the story firsthand, but it's fine with us doing it this way. And he actually, in 2011, he released a charity wine that now goes to the Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, where he got his treatments and sort of got rid of cancer there. And in March 2011, he created the Never Quit Foundation with his wife. And pretty much what the Never Quit Foundation does is it helps with children's quality of life that have cancer and helping eventually find a cure to cancer. So I would have loved to have John Lester on the show. Would have loved him to share his story with you instead of us sharing it from a third-person point of view, but it's all good. So we need to take a quick break on Inside MLB. When I come back, I will be sharing my personal story and how I have dealt with cancer in my life. Please stay tuned. We'll be back on Inside MLB in about a minute. Back in Inside MLB, and I thank you all for listening. I thank you all for tuning in. This is a very special show for me, and it's for a very special reason. So I am going to share my personal story with cancer, and I know a lot of people, they've dealt with cancer, and I have responses in the chat room that we'll share later in the show. I thank you for sharing, because I'm about to share myself too. And we'll take this story back to October of 2010. I'm 14 years old right now. Will be 15 at the end of the month. So at that time, I was 9 years old, I believe, just turned 9. And October, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, right? And my mom, she was actually diagnosed with cancer in October. We had a house sitter at the time, and my mom and dad, they came home, and my mom was crying. So we didn't really know what was going on, and they ended up going out that night, and the house sitter ended up putting us to bed. Nothing really to think of it at the moment. I mean, I was 9. My siblings were 7, 5, and 3 years old. So we didn't really think of it at that point much. But lo and behold, you'll hear what happens later. So like the next day or so, I think it was, we were told that she had been diagnosed with breast cancer, stage 1 at the time. And we were told that there was a 99% chance that she would survive, that she would go through the chemotherapy, go through the radiation, all the surgeries and everything, and she'd be in remission today. And we'll fast forward this story to about July of 2011. And that's when the breast cancer crossed the blood-brain barrier. And at that point, we didn't really know about it because our parents, they were trying to protect me and my siblings. They didn't really want to tell us much about it. And actually, we went on vacation in August, and I'll get into that in a second. But at the end of July in 2011, my mom, she was dying. I know that now, but I didn't know that back then. And so what my parents decided to do is they decided to renew their wedding vows. On July 31st, 2011, a big party. We had the priest over and everything, and they renewed their wedding vows that they got on September 11th, 1998. So it was definitely a fun day. We had no worries at that point. We thought she was going to survive and everything, but then we'll get to that in a second. So we drive down to Florida, and I'm actually in Florida right now, but we usually drive down, and we drove down this year as we usually do. But since my mom had cancer, she couldn't really go through the drive, so we decided to take a plane, and it was the first time that all of us had ever been on a plane, so it was a very exciting experience for me and my siblings. And our house sitter came with us too because to help out because my dad was going to be preoccupied with my mom a little bit. So we got on the plane. We were flying from Pittsburgh to Orlando, and I decided to sit next to my mom, and she agreed to switch with one of my siblings on the way back. And when we were on the plane, you know, we were just talking, playing cards and everything. And when we were playing cards, I forget what game it was, maybe war or something like that. But I dropped the cards, right? And when I was leaning down, my mom, she put her hand on my head, and she said, God is calling me. I did not know what this meant at this point, and I asked her, what do you mean? And she said, you'll find out soon enough, and I did find out soon enough. When we arrived in Florida, we were told that that 99% chance likelihood turned into about a 1% chance likelihood, and they had hospice nurses here every day, and they were watching out closely for her. And I actually do have a view of the bed that she was in practically the whole time. So they had hospice nurses come in and out. I like some of the nurses, but there was one that particularly got on my nerve a little bit. She kept watching TV all night pretty loud, and the condo, it does, you know, echo pretty well, and it was a tough time. It definitely was, and a lot of family members down. My grandma, mom's mom, grandpa, mom's dad, my dad's dad, dad's mom, everybody was down here in Florida to, you know, say their goodbyes, and definitely a sad time. And we actually were quite clueless that she was going to be passing for most of the trip until it was about a week or so until she was going to die. We were on a bike ride in, like, the condo complex area, and it was me, my two brothers, and my sister. My sister was 3 years old at the time, so she was actually in a carrier on the back of my dad's bike. And he reminded us about the 99% chance, and he said, what do you think about it now? And that's sort of when my heart dropped. Like, you know when you're on a roller coaster, you get to the top of the hill, and you look down, and your heart just drops. And that's when he revealed the news that she was probably going to die. And the breast cancer turned into brain cancer, and it was just a matter of time now, and to spend the best quality time that we could have possibly spent with her. And that's what we definitely tried to do. About a week later, she was in bed most of the time leading up to this, and about a week later, she felt better. I was actually up at about 5 a.m. I do not know why, and I went into the bathroom to brush my teeth. And my dad accidentally woke him up. And what we decided to do is we decided to go to IHOP. It's about a mile or two down the street. And we thought it would be fun to go, me, my dad, and my mom to IHOP. So we decided to do that, and we were the only ones in the restaurant. And I thought it was the best day ever. My mom was talking. She was up, peppy. She was having a great time. And I thought she would have lived forever after that moment. And definitely a great experience at IHOP. And then what we decided to do is we decided to drive down to Naples to the beach, and we got out. Well, we went to the beach, and it was a great time, absolutely a great time. On the way back, she fell asleep, and we drove to a like a deli ice cream place. It's called Royal Scoop, and we drove to there, and we got ice cream and lunch there. So she was feeling better that day. Everything was great. We got back. My siblings were up with the housekeeper and everything, and I just had a great morning with my mom, who I was just told was dying, so I was pretty happy. And what happened after this was she decided to get in the pool when she hadn't done all the trip. And she decided to get in the pool. We got footage of her. She was laughing, splashing everywhere. It was a great time. And again, I thought she would have lived forever after that day. She fell asleep that night. Everybody, their spirits were up. We were all happy and everything. But then next morning comes and she goes unresponsive. And that was really the biggest blow to me. And the nurses, what they told us was, you know, she can hear you and everything, but she just can't respond to you. And it was comforting, but definitely not how you want to see your mom in her last moments. You definitely don't want to see her like that. She had a nose thing in to take all the mucus out, so she wasn't getting clogged on all these painkillers to relieve the pain. And she just did not look like herself, and understandably so. And she was just there, sleeping, unresponsive. And I know that she could hear me, and she was probably hovering in and out of her body at that point. And it was definitely a sad moment. She was unresponsive for the whole day, and literally we were all in the room, crowded together, saying prayers in there, hoping for some kind of miracle. Please wake up. Please wake up. This was on August 21st. And it's definitely a very sad moment. The next day, we woke up and we were all hopeful. We actually all slept on the floor around her bed. We all had little rosaries in our hands, Bible right next to her, and a lot of tears were flowing, and a lot of prayers were being said, and a lot of sleepless nights. Next morning, we wake up. We all hope she's awake, tap her a little bit. Lo and behold, she's unresponsive. The good thing, though, is she's still alive. There's still hope. God is prevailing at this point. It gets about noon in the day, and the nurses, they know, the hospice people, they know that it's going south, and it's going south pretty fast. And we were told it was about time to say our goodbyes. I don't know what order I was in, but I remember we were all just sitting on the couch. We were all waiting to go in for our 10, 15 minutes with her and just talk to her, flow everything out to her that we ever wanted to say, because it was our last time that we'd be talking to her when she was alive. And I think I was up first out of my siblings. I don't really remember that detail particularly, but I remember I went in. And it was more of like a slow walk. Like, it was like I was dreaming. Like, I didn't know what was really happening at that point. It was sort of a mental shock to me. And when I went in, I saw the same mom that I saw the night before when we were all praying. She was starting. Her skin color definitely fading, and, you know, looked more like a dead person than a live person to me. And pretty much what I did was I got up in bed with her and I just hugged her. I cried and I made promises to her. I told her things that I haven't told anybody in my life and haven't told anybody since. And I told her all that. And what I realized in that moment was I'd always liked my dad a lot better than I liked my mom. And I realized, why did I do that? Why didn't I spend more quality time with her while I had the opportunity? Why didn't I spend that quality time? Why was I focused on other things? And we don't realize what we have until we lose it. And to all of you who are listening out there, I urge you, anybody that you love in your life, that you care about just a little bit, spend quality time with them. They are first and foremost. Because if you don't spend the time with them now, you don't know what's going to happen the next day. You just don't. And I learned that firsthand. So from now on, with my grandparents, for example, I spend as much quality time with them as I possibly can, because I never know when it could turn south one day. I never know when it could be my last time talking to her. So you just have to live life with the people around you. Like, it's either going to be your last day, or it's going to be the people around you last day, because, or they're going to be diagnosed with cancer the next day or whatever. So again, I was cuddled up in bed with her, crying, hugging her, right, telling her all the promises I'd make. And I actually have kept a promise that I have made. I promised my mom in that bed 5 years ago in about 2 weeks that I would visit her every single month at the cemetery. I would visit her as much as possible in between then. But I just talked to her like she's my mom, like she's still standing there, everyday person. And it's, you know, sad, hard to say this, right? But, you know, sometimes we have a picnic, my family and I, we bring out the picnic blanket, we put, you know, sandwiches and stuff by her grave. And, you know, we just talked to her. We talked about the moments we had with her. Like, she's just right there with us. And I know she's with us, just coming right above in, and she hears everything we say. And it's definitely sad, and there definitely are still tears shed to this day. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think about her. It just doesn't happen. And actually, after she did die, and after I made all these promises, and after I continued keeping these promises, this show is actually what helped me a little bit through this. My family, they, you know, it was all wrecked. They were really all in their rooms and everything. And I started the show in fourth grade. Going to be a freshman in high school this year, so be the fifth year doing it with you guys. And I appreciate all of you for listening, right? And sort of to get her off my mind, I turned to doing this show. I turned to baseball. I turned to anything that would just get her off my mind because that was just easiest for me. It was just easier for me to run away from it all than to confront it head on. It was just a lot easier for me to do that than it was for me to do anything else. And I'm grateful for that. And really, when she did die, you know, it was sort of like a mental shock. Like, I didn't really know what's happening. It's like when a relative or somebody that you live with, they go away for a week or two, and you just, I mean, you miss them and everything, but you know they're going to be back. You know that they're going to be back one day. And this was different because it hit me about 2 weeks later. I started crying one night because I realized I'm not going to see my mom until I die one day. And it was a really a sad moment for me. And at that time, it was just my dad and my siblings, and we talked about alcoholism a little bit earlier in the show in our 40 Startling Facts. And my dad was actually struggling with alcohol at that point. And it was really tough because I sort of had to take the brunt of it. I had to take care of my siblings and everything. And it was tough, you know, getting them up in the morning to go to school, getting myself ready to go to school, but also getting them breakfast and everything, making sure they get to bed, bathe, everything that you need to do to take care of somebody. Because my dad couldn't be there for us. Then one September day, just got back from school, and me and my brother, we were up in our room, and we were praying. We were asking God, why has this happened to us, right? And all of a sudden, the front door opens, and we think it's our dad, and we're excited to see him. Hopefully, he is sober. Hopefully, he is not drinking, right? But then, somebody else comes in the house. We don't know who it is at that point. Me and my brother, we say, Dad, are you home, right? And he says, it's me. Comes up the stairs. And at that point, we had our bedroom locked. It was kind of funny because we snuck some snacks and we didn't want to get in trouble. The guy comes up the stairs. He starts rattling on the door, and we wonder who it is. I go to check the door. I think it's just my dad, right? Who else would it be? I open the door, and it is a I just see a guy running. A guy in a hoodie running, and he actually had a gun in his hand. And he decided, while he was running, to shoot off this gun. And our house, what it is, you go up these stairs and there's two bedrooms, one on the left, one on the right, and there's a bathroom in between. I came in to go see who it was. The shot was fired and it went straight into the bathroom, about a foot or two away from it. At that point, I really didn't know what to do. I just didn't. My siblings, they were downstairs. My two other ones. My brother, he was in the room. He was just as shocked as I was. Pretty much I told him, lock the door. I'm going to get Blake and Grace, who are my two younger siblings. They were in their bedroom downstairs. I was just praying. I was just hoping that this guy, he would not get to them. That's all I wanted at this point. I ran down the stairs, and I went straight to their room. And our house, it is sort of like a box. And there are two ways to go. Left goes to the dining room. Right goes to their bedroom. The guy went left. I went right. And I thank God to this day that I chose right and he chose left. Because if not, I do not know where I would be today. Got my siblings, locked the door, and weathered the storm until he got out. He went around battling all these doors. He stole, I think, $500 and my brother's medicine that he needs to behave, right? And we hear him leave the house, and we get up. I go to get my brother, and I go to the house phone, and I call 911. I said somebody came into our house, came in, decided to shoot and stole. I don't even know at that point. Police were there about 5 minutes later, and they asked, "Where's your dad?" And he said, "I don't know, sir," right? And so my grandparents, my grandma, actually lucky enough that she lives like 5 minutes from us. She came over immediately, and she was in tears, as most of us were. And we didn't really know what to do at that point because our dad was struggling with alcohol. Our mom had just died about a couple weeks ago. And this robber, he just came into our house and shot at me. Didn't know what to do. And at that point, the courts decided to, say that it's not a habitable place to live anymore because my dad just can't take care of us anymore. And I'm at 10 years old. She died on the 22nd. My birthday was on the 30th, and I was in the funeral home on the day of her birthday. I mean, on my birthday, in the funeral home, seeing my mom in a coffin. And I actually spoke at the funeral. I'm not going to get into that now, but I did speak at the funeral. And again, I was 10 years old, not suitable to take care of my siblings. I mean, I was getting them up for school every day, putting them to bed, doing everything necessary. My grandma had no idea about it. She usually came over like once or twice a week. And she pretty much decided, instead of allowing us to be put up for adoption and go somewhere else, maybe be split up, she took us in. And I couldn't be happier. I love my grandma. She loves us. And my grandma and my grandpa, they're separated, but they are our legal guardians. And I couldn't be happier. I try to help out as much as possible. And they always say, every time a door is shut, in this case with my mom, a window is open twice as large. And that's why I think it happened. My grandparents, they are amazing. I love them. And they're just absolutely amazing. I can't use enough words to describe them there. But now, 5 years ago, coming up on the 22nd, she died August 22nd, 2011. So coming up on the anniversary, and I guess I'll announce something now. I know most of you listening probably aren't from Pittsburgh, but on September 10th, September 10th, 2016, me and I will be putting on a fundraiser in honor of my mother. I have named it the Christina Defector Foundation. Made a logo and everything, and I'll probably put that up on the website at MLBinside.com. But again, this fundraiser, it's going to be an honor for going to be playing tennis, football, basketball, everything under the sun. And then I guess I'll sort of give the speech I just gave to you there. But if you do want to support this cause and you do want to rid of cancer, because I know it's affected a lot of people. It hasn't just affected me. It's affected all of you listening out there in a lot of ways. And I know that. And so if you do want to help this battle, if you are able to, please donate to the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute in honor of Christina D. Fetcher. That's where all the in lieu of flowers and everything went on 2011. And I'm happy to start this up. And this fundraiser is actually going to help us, you know, establish a foundation. And I'm excited for that. Savannah, who is helping me out today, she will also be helping out with that. I'm pretty sure she's excited for it, as am I. And it should be a great day. It's a day to celebrate her. And my parents' anniversary is actually on September 11th, back in 98. And so it'll fit in well, as it'll be on a Saturday. And they, their anniversary was on a Sunday the next day. I thank you for listening to my story. I hope it brought something to you. Thank you again for listening. And I'll be back on Inside and we'll be in a minute to get to who you all stand up for. Maybe I'll share some of your stories so you can put them in the chat room. We'll be back on Inside and we'll be in a minute or two. Back on Inside MLB, and I thank you all for listening, and I appreciate everybody out there. I'll get to your guys' stories if you want to share them in a minute. I'll scroll through the chat in a second, but we'll get into now. I think it's definitely cancer, right? Had an impact on my life, but I know that I'm not the only one. Now I'm going to open up the discussion to everybody listening, and then Savannah, she's going to share who she stands up for. So I pose a question: who do you stand up for? I would love it if you guys could call in and talk to me about it. The number is 713-955-0677, 713-955-0677. Or if you're in the chat room, please tell us about it, and I will broadcast it out. So now I will turn the discussion to Savannah, and I will ask her, who do you stand up for?
I stand up for everyone with breast cancer or any cancer in general, but in particular – my mom's aunt died of breast cancer last year, and I have seen the negative effect that it has on her and that it has had on my family.
Definitely does have a negative impact, and we do want to obviously get rid of cancer as fast as possible, and that's obviously the goal. It is the goal to one day get rid of cancer. And I will check the chat room right now, see if we have anything. All right, nothing right now, but feel free to put that in the chat room if you want to call in. The number is 713-955-0677. And yes, this is a program about the MasterCard Stamp to Cancer campaign, and it was a little bit sharing my story and everything that has to do with it. And we actually have a caller. Thank you for calling in. We'll take your call now. 631 area code, you are live on the Stand to Cancer show. How are you doing tonight?
Okay, Benson, remarkable job on your behalf and your co-host. Absolutely fantastic job. my wife's father came down with leukemia, and she actually was a what were you a she was a donor, a stem cell donor to her father. It was very rare that a sibling could be a donor, and or maybe a sibling, whatever it was. She did that and saved his life, gave him a good 6 or 7 years, maybe more, and he just recently passed away a year ago. So on behalf of Clay Lamont, we stand up for Clay.
Thank you.
And just keep going, kiddo. You're doing a great job. You really are quite a kid. Good luck to you.
Thank you. All right, so yeah, we stand up for him and all the people with cancer, any cancer in general. We stand up for them, and we obviously want the 60 cent. We don't want the battle to continue, and we know all the negative impact it can have on everybody's lives. We know that it can harm people in a lot of ways, and we know that we are battling against it, though. And I forget what the mortality rate was, but it has definitely dipped since 1991, I believe. Let me pull that up. Yes, so the mortality rate has fallen from 215 deaths per 100,000 people in 1991 to 172 deaths per 100,000 people in 2010, and has probably fallen a couple from now since then. So we are getting better, but there is still a lot that we can do, and I will try to fill you in because you probably do see the commercials. Baseball fans out there, the Stand Up Cancer, and baseball is very much part of that campaign. And I see the commercials all the time watching the Pirate games, and that was actually our opening. It was a clip from the Stand Up Cancer. All the baseball players, they sort of came together and they said who they're standing up to. And actually this past Friday at the PNC Park when they were playing the Reds, it was Stand Up Cancer night, and they got a t-shirt when they came in. And everybody got signed. And then in the middle of the seventh inning, they all stood up. It was definitely a beautiful moment. Absolutely beautiful. And we are all in this fight together. Could not be won single-handedly. People fight this disease every day. 20,000 people can't. 20,000 people die of this disease every day. Again, we can work together today to bring that down to 14,000 just from alcohol, tobacco, healthy body weight, and physical activity. And that's pretty much the goal right now. And other goals that we can set for ourselves is, you know, try to donate time, money, anything you can donate to help in the fight. My fundraiser on September 10th, hopefully that will help out as much as possible. But obviously I can't do it alone, and that's why I'm asking for your help. And I appreciate if you could. Again, if you want to support the Christina D. Fechter Foundation, please donate to the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute in honor of Christina D. Fechter. It would mean a lot to me, and it would mean a lot to the cancer patients who do receive treatment from the University of Pittsburgh. And so please do that. Again, I think I mentioned earlier, but back in 2011, in lieu of flowers, that's what happened. Yeah, so instead of flowers, it was donations to them, and definitely a good thing. And really, I think there are a lot of strategies that you can implement if you are a family member or if you are somebody that has cancer, right? And I'm actually on this website right now, cancerfightingstrategies.com. I just pulling it up right now. But we'll go through what they think their 11 most effective strategies are for the rest of the show. And then we can also take more calls, take anything you want, because we all need to stand up together. We all need to do that. So I will gladly take your calls, gladly take your stories, and I'll share out over the broadcast who you stand up for. And then we'll be done in about 5 minutes. So let's read this here. All right. It says, a diagnosis of cancer or even a suspicion of cancer is fearful. You reflect on friends or family who died of cancer, of all the celebrities who got cancer, gradually deteriorated, and died. So it's no wonder research shows that cancer is the most feared disease in the world, along with being the most feared word, too. How could it not be, given these circumstances? It may not be so fearful to you if you've been told to come here to read this information by someone who would be a stage 4 cancer by using the cancer-fighting strategies covered on this website. Otherwise, it's no wonder that you're afraid and skeptical. How could you be? All right, so I think you can probably go visit on your own time, cancerfightingstrategies.com. So you go over that, see how people have beaten stage 4 cancer. And you can do that on your own time. So last chance, call in 713-955-0677 on who you stand up for. I'd definitely appreciate that. And you could also put in the chat room, and I will broadcast it out. But I guess I'll play music for the next 3 minutes. And if you have anything to say, call in. I'll leave it up for 3 minutes. And after that, the episode will be over. So if nobody calls in, nobody does anything between that and then, we'll bring Savannah on to say our goodbyes to you, because we definitely appreciate everything you do. And thank you all the time for your listening. I definitely extremely appreciate it. And again, this is the only show of the year that I work with the co-host, and honored to have this special co-host come on with me today. And we'll get into the closing in a second. All right. One moment, please. Excuse me. So, thank you all for tuning in to Inside MLB today. I had a lot of fun with you guys, but please, if you want to stand up to cancer, again, donate to the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute in honor of Christina Defecture. And thank you, Savannah, for joining us today. I had a great time with you, and I hope you did too as well.
Yes, and thank you for having me on, Benson. I had a great time.
All right, that's going to do it for our show today. We'll be back with baseball on Wednesday. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. And in the meantime, please head over to our website at MLBinside.com for daily articles written by myself on Pittsburgh Pirates. Have a good Monday, and I will see you all on Wednesday. Good night.
Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
Space Jam.
Here's your chance, do your dance at the Space Jam. All right.
All right.